You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back. Welcome in. This is Country Roads Confidential at earsports.com, part of the Paramount Podcast Network. I am Mike Casazza, welcoming in Chris Anderson. Chris, 65-7, West Virginia beats Towson. And that'll about wrap it up for today. We'll talk to you next time.
I think that about covers it, right? I mean, usually when we do these podcasts and as the game's going on, I'm sure you do the same thing, but I write down notes at different points of what's going on, add to them, subtract from them, you know, continue the list going. Sometimes those notes end up a page long on a Word document. Today, about 4 lines, 3.5 lines, maybe. Mm-hmm. It is what we thought it was. It looked good. Things looked good. But seriously, in all seriousness, was there anything you actually took from this? Like, that was positive that you took from this game that you saw?
First win in 295 days.
That's one way to put it.
Had to have one. I mean, had to. And again, this pops up at a good time. But I would say that first half is probably about as well as they can play, as they could be expected to play. I'm not saying that was a good half of football against a quality opponent, but scored a touchdown scored every time they had the ball. I think, did they get a touchdown? I can't remember. But anyway, scored every time they had the ball, got nothing from the defense. It's 35-7 at one point. The yards are like 315-12, first downs are 17-0. Everything was, the plays were 43-12. That's what you're supposed to do. And we don't think this team was necessarily wired the right way at the start of the season. For one reason or another, there was a short circuit here or there. And then, listen, we asked a legitimate question at the end of our preview podcast. Is it right to assume that they're going to enjoy all the trappings of an FBS, a Power 5 program against an FCS team? And we both were like, yeah, probably. But now we have that answer. Like, it's not so broken that you can't pencil them in for the most automatic thing at this level of football, which is that you should be able to stomp an FCS team. And this team may not be perfect. It certainly has flaws. We saw fewer of them today. Perhaps some were ironed out, but stomped an FCS team. I think, again, relative to expectations, that first half was probably about as good as you could see and expect, I would think.
Yes, here West Virginia's drives offensively. Touchdown, 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 field goal, touchdown, 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 touchdown.
10 for 10.
Not even, you know, the old, don't count that, kneel down at the end of the half. No, just score, score, score. That was it. So offensively, yeah, what can you take from the FCS opponent? You're supposed to beat them like this, and they did. And that's good. That's a positive. Like you said, there were no lingering effects from the loss, it didn't seem like. Mm-hmm. And offensively, and Neil Brown said it in the postgame, they've stacked 3 very impressive offensive performances in a row. Offensively, there is a lot to like about this team, a whole lot. I do have one question mark, and we'll get to it in a minute, but this is a if you put this offense with a very good defense, this is a conference champion contending team, a conference championship contending offense. Got to figure everything else out, of course. Defense, it was nice to see them come out. They came out with energy, and they came out ready to compete. That front six, I like that they made changes. It has been one of my biggest gripes since Neil Brown arrived in Morgantown. I just don't feel that he makes the changes. He talks about changes. He sees things that are going wrong. There are certain players who struggle, and he seems reluctant to make those moves. He made those moves. He made them, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And we saw a new lineup. We saw new starters. We saw guys in new positions. We saw young guys get not starter reps, but got in there pretty early. So I'm interested to see how that carries over against an actual opponent on Thursday against Virginia Tech. But some good things to take from the energy and the changes that you saw on defense.
Yeah, let's get into that. To no surprise of anybody who's listening or reading, Sean Martin starts at defensive end. That's fine. There's no upvote, downvote based on what you saw there today. Curiously to me, they do follow through on the who is playing where at linebacker. Lee Koba stays in the middle. Actually, Caden Beiser ends up as a leading tackler for West Virginia, but not because Koba was bad. And then they make a pretty peculiar switch. X-Ray Lowe starts at will, and you think, okay, well, Dixon's had a bad run. He's the backup. No, Dixon is now a spear. And Jasir Cox, who started the first game at spear and played there with Davis Malinger in the second game, is now a backup will. And you're thinking, okay, Malinger certainly started spear. He's the guy who's been starting there. And if they moved a guy from will to spear, then it's probably too early to assume that Dixon could do that. No, Dixon starts at spear. And the explanation being that they're putting him on the wide side of the field because he's longer and he can run. Going to have to set edges and play the defense against the run better than maybe he has been. And then Cox is the backup right now, who can give you some flexibility, I think, in covered situations. Even though Lowe is a pretty versatile player and kind of just did what you expect him to do in a game like today. They get maybe two tackles, but in position to do stuff. I don't know that we actually had that option on our bingo card, but it's a provocative solution to a problem that they have identified, which is that they need more of that speed and range out in the field side at spear. And maybe Cox is too small for it. Dixon's bigger. And maybe Malinger's not quite ready for that. Dixon's just more of a natural talent. Maybe this is where he's going to be permanently, and maybe he flourishes.
Yeah, that one kind of stunned me that he was over there. Not because I don't think he can do it. It's just hard to imagine and have these conversations about guys, because we have discussed Dixon, you know, as a will, but the idea of him playing on the inside, like at Mike, has been thrown about. The idea of maybe even him playing Bandit has been thrown about. But then you go the complete opposite direction, and suddenly he's playing spear. And just a reminder to those of you out there, like, the spear position practices with the cornerbacks. Like, so we're talking about a guy that, you know, was viewed as like an edge rushing linebacker, is now, you know, working out at practice with the corners. But he's a talent, and he can do a lot of things. And yeah, that's what Neil Brown said, wants him out on the field side of the defense. And hopefully that length can help cover up some of these running lanes that you're seeing for other teams.
We'll see against higher level competition if the athleticism or the ability to make plays or get off blocks out in space is there. But for today, just they're the out athlete Towson pretty much position by position. That's good, I think. Obviously, remember we saw them get pushed around by the LIU defensive line last year.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen today. So those are good things too. Offensively, let me stop here for a second. When I put together my snap counts for a Sunday, do I put the spear as a safety now? Or is Dixon's inclusion there now, which is kind of against the grain, is that indicative of like a true hybrid, but not like necessarily the linebacker who's actually more of a safety? Here's a safety who's actually more of a linebacker. They have like two different types of players there now, it seems like.
Yeah, and this screams to me, and it kind of, you got a hint of it from Brown when he said, hey, you know, this isn't completely unheard of with Dixon at spear, because he said they have done it in certain, I believe he said certain packages, certain looks. And it's kind of that thought of, you know, if you're going with a pass heavy or a run heavy, and maybe you come with another true cornerback type playing the spear. If you're going from another angle, you're trying to put another defense in there, maybe you're going with more of a linebacker type that can give you a bigger defense that can play up closer to the line of scrimmage. So I'm interested to see, like you said, once they play a Power 5 opponent, how much of this is package specific for Dixon being on the field.
You can have a package as your main defense. That'll be interesting, because if you're going to see wide open offenses, we'll see. That may be the best way for them to go to. And it takes away a weakness, I think, that they have identified, or at least addresses it. We'll see. Let's get offense. I think we can say that they were good today on offense, but I think you can see, as you said, this has a chance to be a very, very good offense. And this probably indicates why, for example, Neil Brown, believe it or not, why he didn't go for it on 4th-and-1 against Pitt. Because even if Pitt does go down and score, you're going to give the ball back to that offense that maybe would have gone down and scored if not for a really fluky player by maybe the best player on offense not named JT Daniels. And then you look at all the offensive exploits last week. Again, don't go for it for the touchdown because you might get a stop and you might get the ball back and you might be able to make up an 11-point deficit. And they did last week against Kansas. And then today, again, 9 touchdowns and a field goal and 10 possessions. There's only a little bit of room to eliminate to make that the maximum efficiency. So they're very good on offense here, and I think they can project that going forward. Texas had some good defensive statistics. Offense not quite there. So that'd be a good matchup for them too. But to me, and I asked Brown about this, and I think you could see it too, that offense kind of empowers them now in ways that had not happened before. The quarterback is a game changer. Their running game can really, I don't want to say can score from any spot in the field, but you can certainly pop plays on handoffs now that we haven't seen before. And the receivers, there's a chance that, you know, there's a chance that they're going to have some big numbers outside with Prather, it looks like, and Ford Wheaton. That's a lot of the field you're covering, a lot of different ways to move the ball. But you could tell right away after that kickoff return touchdown, which we can spend some time on if you want to. I know it's an FCS team, but like it looked like they wanted to get back out there and be like, okay, fine, you messed with us. Here comes another, you know, touchdown drive. And I watched it. There was Daniels just kind of got his helmet and went to the sideline and was ready to go. There was no panic. There was no, oh, whoa. There's no, well, this is what happens to a team like this. It was just like, hey, our offense is actually adept at scoring the football. Watch us work. And that's what happened. And again, that's a snapshot. I don't know how realistic it is, but that's the feeling I got watching because, you know, there was some adversity there, right? Right off the bat, some adversity. And the offense said, no, we got this. The defense may not be great. We got this. And they did. And the defense was fine today too, but that offense seems extremely qualified.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
One thing that bothered me about this team, about this offense, I think the offensive line... In this game, when you talk about Power 5 teams versus FCS opponents, the biggest talent discrepancy is usually maybe quarterback, but also on the offensive and defensive fronts. That is where the Power 5 team dominates the FCS opponent. And I feel like West Virginia won the battle pretty clearly, but they didn't dominate this one. Especially early, especially with that first team. And I felt like, you know, they were getting a little bit of pressure on JT Daniels. They were getting into the backfield a little bit. You saw them get mixed up, West Virginia's offensive line get mixed up, get called for a couple holds on a couple plays or penalties for a couple plays there. And I just, it concerns me because now, you know, there was a solid effort against Pitt. I'm not sure they won that battle, but again, you're going up against, you know, All-American, All-Conference guys. So I thought it was a loss, but a win kind of thing. Like they played well, but they didn't actually win the battle. Kansas. And then this, and I'm still waiting for that very good performance from this offensive line.
They'll be as good as the right side is. That was the story at the start of the year. It's the story 3 games in. Jordan White dresses today. I think I read you when you said this, Chris, but Brown said on his radio show Thursday that White would play. It was just a matter of whether or not he would start or when they would get him in. I never saw him. I'll look at the game notes if they're accurate. I don't believe he played. And they start Hubbard. They play Yates. Yates got some left tackle reps because they wanted Hubbard to keep playing it right in the third quarter. And curious to me, two things very early on, because I would assume that West Virginia was confident this game would get out of hand because of their offense and the combination with their defense, which is what happened. But what happened? They started with two tight ends, and they made hay on the left side when they ran the ball. I don't know if that's coincidental, if that's the way that the plays broke, if that's what the read was for the running back, but when the running back is on the right side of the quarterback and he keeps going left, or the running back is on the left side of the quarterback and he's darting left, and there's tight ends over there, and there's a tight end who's sweeping over to get the backside and the right, you know, split zone stuff or whatever, or if you cover the defensive end across the right tackle. My point being, they were conscious of the left side and trying to do things in the left. I think that if White is good at right guard and their right guard, right tackle is better with him at guard and Nestor at tackle, probably want to see that soon. So it might have been good for him to get in. I understand, hey, let him rest and make sure he is as healthy as possible Thursday, because that comes fast. I'm not sure we've seen a whole lot of Jordan White at right guard to be sure that that's the best combination. And again, think of it this way. If you assign everybody in the offensive line a value, 1 through 10, what's the highest value combination? You know, what is Nestor at right tackle versus right guard? Is he a 9 versus a 6? Is he a 9 versus a 7? We'll see. I don't know. But, like, coincidentally, you also have him involved in the other part where, what's Jordan White's value? What is Jaquais Hubbard value? How they get that going, I don't know. And you're right. Today, at times, when it was good on good, that wasn't encouraging, I don't think. And, again, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme, but this is not a grand scheme kind of game. You really look at small snapshots here, and that's one I think it probably does have to be highlighted. Not a lot of negativity in offense. We're looking hard, and we're maybe being mean, but I do think that's a valid observation.
Did you have any other concerns on offense before I move to defense?
Where the heck has Preston Fox been?
At some point, like, I get it that he plays, you know, the same spot as Bryce Ford Wheaton, right? Like, and it's hard to take Ford Wheaton off the field right now because he's playing extremely well. But at some point, I think you have to find a spot for Fox when he does it in practice always. He did it in the spring game. He does it in the scrimmages. Whenever he gets, you know, he gets into an actual game and does it there. So there seems to be a pattern going on here.
Yeah. Punt return, too. And again, against the good punt return team from Towson, because I paid attention to this, but I'm pretty sure they had all their guys still on their punt return team. I doubt very much they're subbing out their punt return package to get their backups reps on the punt team. Whereas Fox had backups he's worked with. Now, maybe those are the guys that he works with, but that's not the best protection he has out there. He didn't have a great alley. He made a 27-yard return of it. And the touchdown catch is from Marchio, who's pretty gifted, and it's about as good as it can be. How many snaps a game can he play? I don't know. He hadn't played offense before today, this season. So where do you get him out there? When do you get him out there? I don't know, but I know he can play inside, and he's actually listed as an inside receiver, so it was odd that he was outside, especially when it looked like they were trying to feed Cortez Bram and Jeremiah Aaron today to speed them up. So that was good. But again, not a critique, but I just saw him pop off the page again. And that seems to be the thing with me. And I just don't know why he wouldn't give him a spin against a good team. And maybe he's earned that today. That was one thing that Brown said. And he was kind of pressed on, you know, hey, we saw some guys. We got some good looks. We're going to figure out if we can use some of these people moving forward. Well, what does that look like, especially against a team like this? I mean, for lack of a better phrase, if you want to personify it, it looks like Preston Fox, a guy who made a splash play on special teams. He's on the kickoff team, I believe. Kickoff return team, and then, hey, receiver too, wherever you put him, looks like he can do something. So good hands, reliable hand, probably somebody you can trust. Who else did they find? We'll find out on film and their review, and you might need more people Thursday because it turns around so fast and that recovery is hard to find. So if you built up some reserves today, hey, good. That's part of the point of this exercise today.
Yep. Speed through running through my other notes again, like there just wasn't much, and I'm trying not to talk about the other sides of the ball as extend this podcast as long as the broadcast extended West Virginia's game today. Made note that defense again looked good, sharp, a lot of energy. There was like 8 plus minutes left in the third quarter, and that was when second and third stringers were going in on defense. And Towson had 0 net rushing yards, 0, when West Virginia subbed out their first team defense. That's amazing. Special teams, that's, you know, one bad punt return early, better punt return later, kickoff return for a touchdown. That just looked like a disaster. It looked like there was a mix-up on what was called, because it looked like Grothaus was kicking short left, trying to pin to that corner, but then the rest of West Virginia's kickoff unit was going right because there were only 3 West Virginia players on that third of the field with 4 Towson blockers and the guy running the ball. So I don't. Hey, kudos to finally finding a crummy ESPN 3 Big 12 Now camera angle where they put the camera right behind the kickoff returner. So it was just plain as day to see from afar. And one other note was the other. Oh, yeah. Kudos to the fans, Mike. I mean, we.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't joke on here. I mean, I was dead serious. I thought that this week might be so bad with attendance that they would push for the record worst home attendance, you know, in decades or maybe ever, like as far as Mountaineer Field is concerned. But I thought it'd be 30 to 35,000. You know, I think the lowest I saw going back was like 31,000. I believe that was Iowa State back in 2013, the 4-8 year. But it was, did they release an official number?
Over 50,000.
Over 50,000, yeah. And I mean, it looked like it on TV. And you said it looked like it there in the press box, too. So kudos to the fans for, you know, still showing up.
50,703. And I'd believe that. I believe it, Chris.
I do, too. I mean, again, it looked like it was full-ish on TV.
Some notations here from me. First time with 6 rushing touchdowns since 2007, the Western Michigan game. So that's pretty good. And the first time 300 rushing and 300 passing since the 2016 win against Texas Tech. Is that the last time they won there? No, they won in 18, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But anyways, that was 48-17, 300 passing, 300 rushing. West Virginia does that today. All 4 quarterbacks lead a touchdown drive, a pair of 100-yard rushers, and spread the wealth on offense on the receiving side of it. It wasn't a Bryce Ford Wheaton all-star game, but didn't have to be. And again, they developed some. They at least got a couple players out there and let them use their practice time to their advantage. And that's again when you're spinning around 4 different quarterbacks, you're going to have a lot of different receivers in there too. So hey, good for them. And we'll see how much this carries forward Thursday. Again, 27-7, Virginia Tech beats Wofford. West Virginia 65-7 beats Towson. If I do my math, West Virginia should win by 38 points. Is that right?
I think fans will take that. I think
sign up for it right now, right?
Yep.
Anything else, sir?
No, that's it for me. I think I'll go ahead and call it now. I don't think we've discussed this now, but given the short week, I believe we're going to be skipping right past the Q&A podcast because I think we're going to be doing a preview podcast, and then I'll be doing a Virginia Tech little podcast with our Virginia Tech guys. So I'm not sure we're going to get a Q&A about this Towson game. I don't want to ruin the streak of record-setting questions asked because I just don't think we're going to get that many after this game.
Oh, you think Tech will fire out the fans?
I think the Tech game, one way or another, will keep the questions rolling in. I mean, don't be afraid to ask some questions on the board. Mike and I are still there. We're going to be posting, but I think we may just skip that part of the pad because with this short week, we got to get on the preview podcast early. We can't wait till Wednesday or Thursday to do that one.
Let me just throw this out as catnip. Are you ready?
Yep.
Had a message from a secret admirer that I sent to you, right?
Yes.
Instructions to meet somebody at a clandestine place today.
The Jerry West Lounge?
To talk about the big issues in the football program. It was very all the president's men.
Love it.
Had a couple of those, it turns out, actually, too. So I'm armed with intel now. I can answer all the questions, but I can't tell you how I know this stuff, too. So you'll just have to trust me on this. As always, you just kind of close your eyes and hold your nose and see if I can lead you to the promised land. We'll see.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll be the first one to bite, Mike.
All right. Until then, I'm Mike Kazaza.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
We'll talk to you next time.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.